to Show Me Your Mic. I'm your host, Chris Enns. This is the podcast about podcasting. You can't swing an internet stick without hitting an article about podcasting these days, but you heard it here first, folks, or at least slightly first. You can find it online at goodstuff.fm/smym or on Twitter at smym_fm. For this episode, I've got Jason DeFilippo from the Grumpy Old Geeks podcast. We compare recording in person with friends versus over Skype with strangers or enemies, how computers ruin everything, and we even get on a few soapboxes to rant. Not surprising, given the climate. My thanks to Campaign Monitor for sponsoring this episode of Show Me Your Mic. More about them a little more in the show. Now here's my conversation with Jason.
Do you have any questions for me before we start?
No, I don't think so.
Okay.
I don't think I do. Maybe I should. Now I'm worried that I forgot something. I'm all out of sorts this week because my wife has gone to visit her sister on the other side of the world, actually. And so my kids, we have three kids, and they're sort of, I'm shuttling them back and forth with grandparents and stuff. And so just all sorts of normal routines have gone haywire. And so everything just feels a little off. And then also, of course, daylight savings time happened a couple of weeks ago, and I'm still adjusting to, I live in a part of the world where we don't change our clocks ever. And so I always have to adjust to everybody else. I'm used to recording this an hour earlier, you know. Anyways, just all sorts, all out of sorts. And my mom brought me a Starbucks coffee this morning, and that's throwing me off, I guess. I don't know. Just a weird morning. All right. So, Jason, you are from your podcast. Your main podcast is Grumpy Old Geeks. There's a few other shows I noticed sort of digging through the archives and stuff on your site. But welcome to Show Me Your Mic, first of all, of course.
Oh, thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
And your bio or your byline or whatever for the show is your tech talk show, get some guests and talk tech, news, all sorts of stuff. You're up to episode 84 on that show, it looks like, as of this recording anyways, in November, in cold, wintry November. take me back to the beginning of Grumpy Old Geeks, I guess, first of all, and where did it start and what was the motivation?
So basically, my good friend, Brian Schulmeister, and I, we've been friends for about 20 years. We worked in tech long, long ago, and I'd always wanted to start a podcast and then couldn't find the right co-host. And then one day over drinks at the bar, I'm like, yeah, you know what? After 3 hours of griping about the internet, we're like, hey, we should record this. Why not? And so we cobbled together a couple mics and basically started the show out of that, just out of those conversations at the bar.
Nice. And that's, was it always sort of, I haven't listened to every single episode, but did you start with doing it with guests and stuff, or did that come later in the show?
We started just the two of us, just to kind of get our legs under us. And, you know, like most podcasters, we threw away the first couple episodes. Mm-hmm. And once we finally kind of got comfortable, then we started to bring in guests. And it's been random with the guests. We thought that originally that, okay, we have to have guests because guests will bring the audience and then we can grow our podcast from there. And what we originally learned was they don't. guests generally tend not to bring an audience that sticks around. So we do it sporadically now. Whenever we find somebody that we just want to talk to and have them on the show, we'll bring them in. But for the most part, we found that our audience really just likes us to get in fights and complain at each other. So we stick to that model.
And that's where I think it's nice, like just listening to the few episodes I did before we recorded this, is the, you know, you can obviously tell there's a history and camaraderie and experience, shared experiences that is tough to do sometimes when you're starting a new show with someone else who is just a podcaster. You kind of either, you're either trying to convince a friend who you're good friends with to do podcasting, or you have to convince a fellow podcaster to become a friend. and it's not always, either of those mixes sometimes don't always work out well, but obviously it's worked out well for you guys. And the one thing I noticed that because of that, probably a bit of that shared history, both, you know, working and friendship obviously as well, is you are in line with the title of the show. You're free to complain and air some dirty laundry that might otherwise not get aired, I guess, in a relationship that you're not sure where the other person stands or whatever on certain things or whatever. And you can kind of talk a little more freely. Is that something you've found or just, I guess, happen naturally?
Yeah, we we had to temper it in the beginning because we found out that we were just complaining about clients way too much and we'd have to go back and re-edit. Because Brian runs his own consultancy and he works in the music business. And if you've ever dealt with people in the music business, you know it can be extremely frustrating dealing with those people. So he has to temper himself quite a bit. And I have my own consultancy. So we talk about clients a lot and just our shared experience. And we over time, we've learned to kind of, you know, find that middle ground. But we try and be as honest as possible about, you know, our experience in the internet consultancy business and try and make it fun for, you know, the audience.
Yeah, it was on the last episode that I was just listening to before, episode 84, you were talking about a person you used to work with or whatever. And it was kind of like a bit of that. There's a, maybe it's just the Canadian in me too of like apologizing or being too polite, but talking about an experience with this person, and obviously it was a bad experience for both of you or whatever, and that it's something that sometimes isn't done in podcasts very often, that like, which we all do in normal life in various ways, and not that you're like being really harsh or mean gossipy kind of stuff, it was kind of more factual, this is what happened kind of stuff, but it was kind of, it is kind of refreshing to just say, name the names and talk about the things, and instead of sort of hiding around allusions to somebody or whatever, alluding to people and things like that. So have you had, I guess, sort of the pushback or the negative side of that airing of being a little too honest in terms of feedback or people listening who you wouldn't have thought might have listened to the show or something like that?
Not yet. I'm waiting for it. Yeah, that last episode that you listened to, we actually name-checked somebody who we worked with, and that was the first time we've ever done that.
Oh, okay.
And we had been on the fence about that particular article that we actually came out and talked about because, you know, he may still have, my co-host may still have some dealings with her along the way, but it for me, it was the point, it's like, I don't care anymore. Mm-hmm. There's nothing, and everything we said was factual. But yes, I did, you know, name call her and call her the devil, which it, from my perspective, is 100% true.
Right. And now that'll get people to go listen, if nothing else. So there's a little bit of controversy maybe or whatever. But and I think, I mean, within especially the music industry, I have very little dealings on my level, but just, you know, the general perception would be like what you said, where it's, yeah. You either stab someone else in the back before they stab you, I guess is probably a bit of that kind of life. And certainly a lot of that kind of stuff I would imagine goes on. So, but anyways, back to the actual podcast, you also do a couple other shows. I noticed there's on the site anyways, there's the first podcast I did without looking too carefully, I clicked play and it was actually the Beverly Hills Cop theme song started. which is another show you do. Tell me a bit about that show.
Yeah, so that show's called Does It Have Legs, where we find a movie that's at least 20 years old, and me and a couple of my friends will sit around, watch it, and immediately when we're done watching it, we'll review it and see if it's got legs. And I started that show because after doing the podcast with Brian, we started as a two-person team in studio together, and then I moved to Chicago, so then it was a remote show. And I wanted to do, we split the duties on that show. Brian does all the audio side for most of it, and I do all the research and post-production stuff to get it out there. So I wanted to do a show that was just mine and do it in studio with multiple guests, at least three. So that's how Does It Have Legs started. It was just an experiment to start a new show, and it turned out to be a lot more work than I thought it was going to be. And we actually pared that show back. We only do it every other week now, and we've got multiple guests that kind of rotate in and out. But for the most part, it was an experiment to try a show from scratch with no audience and see how new and noteworthy actually impacts audience building from a completely blank show. Because everybody, when we first got into podcasting, was like, oh, you got to get new and noteworthy. It'll make your show. And after I ran that experiment, I found that when new and noteworthy was done, we got about 12 listeners from iTunes. That was it. That was 12 people that stuck. The rest of them were all our friends from social media. So yeah. That was a fun experiment to run. But the best part about it is every other week, it's a reason for me to sit around with my buddies and watch a movie together and talk about it.
Yeah, and that's often there's the whole, you know, I'm sure you've seen many of the articles that have been going around the last little week here because podcasting is now back again, apparently. But I think, and there's the whole business of podcasting, which is, you know, obviously fun to do and trying to make a little money to pay for this hobby. And I think in the grand discussion of all the business of podcasting, it feels like people have kind of forgotten that it's just kind of fun to have an excuse to do that kind of stuff. And so what if that's as much as you're not saying you're not trying to do it at a quality or anything like that, but just so what if that's what it is? You know, it doesn't have to be highly produced, heavily written, scripted kind of stuff too. Obviously this show is not very scripted, but yeah. And I think that's fun. So what was the, you alluded to the fact that it was a little bit more challenging than you thought it was going to be to do that show. What are some of the challenges you came up against?
First off, miking three people was difficult because I've never really done like the whole sound side of it myself. So I was starting off, I had one Rode Podcaster, one off the shelf crappy mic from Fry's that I just picked up for the day of the show, and an Apogee mic, and trying to get all three of those in with people in the same room to even sound remotely the same was difficult. Mm-hmm. Doing the post-production, I did the whole thing in GarageBand, and trying to get that to work was difficult. And also dealing with people who have never been on a podcast before was, you know, it's like herding cats.
Right.
I'm like, no, you have to point your face at the mic. Don't keep looking at the other guy. That was the interesting bit. But I got all that nailed. I eventually threw away all the other mics or gave them to friends and went out and bought three Rode Podcasters. And I'm like, that's it. I'm tired of dealing with it. Mm-hmm. I just got the full suite, which was rather expensive. But in the end, it saved me a lot of headaches.
Yeah. So like the, what I call it a spit guard, but the sort of shock mount and all that kind of the Rode Podcaster kit that they sell? Is that?
Yeah, pretty much. I got the boom arm, the shock mount, and I got, after a while, I went out and got the windscreens for them because it does kind of mitigate a lot of splash from the other guests. And I think it gives a fuller sound, even though that there's a pop guard built into the Rodes. I like how it sounds with the actual windscreen on it.
Yeah, that's what I, for listeners of this show anyways, would know. I use the PR40, and for a long time I'd heard, well, it's got a built-in windscreen type explosives blocker or preventer or whatever. But once I added an actual proper pop filter type of, I keep wanting to call it spit guard because, I mean, that's what it does basically.
Yeah.
But there's nobody eating off of the microphone, luckily. But once I'd added that, it helps both with my mic technique of keeping me like from eating the mic almost, to also just, yeah, keeping some of those peas and whatever off the recording. So,
Worth the
30 or 40 bucks or whatever you end up spending on your mic to get that, I feel anyways. So how do you, in the actual physical room, do you guys watch the movie together and then record? Or is it like you watch the movie separately and come back and meet to record the show?
99% of the time we're in the same room. We've got one guest that can't watch the movie with us because he's got kids and a business. So we watch the movie separately for that one, and then we all just kind of get together that evening. So we watch it the same day, but for just one particular guest is not in the room. But every other one we've done, I think we're episode 29. So 28 of the movies so far, we've all been in the same room. And then literally I wheel out the microphones and we record right there on the couch.
Nice. And so are you recording into, with all those Rode Podcasters, you've got them going into one computer, or does each person sort of record their track and then combine them, or how do you manage that?
Originally, I was doing it on my iMac. I would pick up my iMac, take it downstairs, put it on the living room table, and plug everything into it because it had enough USB ports. And now I'm recording onto a single MacBook Pro with a USB hub.
And that works well enough, like having this, because I was a friend had asked me about just recording, like she wanted to do just like you, like a in-person recording with a couple of mics, and I wasn't 100% sure on the. It felt sketchy for me for some reason, plugging in multiple mics into one computer, USB mics into one computer for some reason. It seemed like that was a recipe for frustration, but it seems to work okay.
It works great. And I mean, now I'm working on a MacBook Pro, so it's got a lot of horsepower in it. But I did that exact same setup with a year or 2 year old MacBook Air, and it still worked just fine.
Nice. That's good to hear. Because it's, and you could get away with, like the Rode Podcaster obviously would work, but the, I always forget the model number. There's a mic I've been recommending to friends and stuff lately, the ATR something something. Come on, internet, catch up with me. ATR 2100, the Audio-Technica, which is a USB/XLR mic that it's around, I think on Amazon, is like 50 or 60 bucks or something. And certainly, like, I love the Rode Podcaster, and it's a great mic. But if you're just trying to get started in podcasting, or like in your case, having multiple guests in a studio or office or or living room or wherever you might be, and you know, want to have consistent sound and maybe don't have the budget for three Rode Podcaster kits, you could actually get away with this ATR, Audio Technica ATR 2100, anyways, as a starting point. And then so into GarageBand, and then edit any fun, interesting post-production kind of stuff that you're doing inside GarageBand.
Actually, I don't do any editing in GarageBand. I hate GarageBand with a passion. So what I do from GarageBand, I kind of play with the levels a bit if somebody's off. But beforehand, I use the audio MIDI setup and just kind of go around the room and get and just tweak everybody's levels straight in the audio setup. So it's kind of consistent going into GarageBand. And then what I just do a straight export out of GarageBand, and I take it into a little app called Sound Studio, which is like a $30 Mac app. And it's my favorite. I've tried all the other ones, and this is, it's just a simple wave editor with, it's got noise gating and, you know, volume control and stuff. But for me to edit a show in that is so much easier than trying to use anything big. And it's worked out great so far. So I do all my editing in that and then just export straight to MP3 out of there.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, it's one, I think that might be the first mention of Sound Studio on this show anyways. I remember hearing about it a few years ago. It's sponsored a few shows and stuff, I think, over the years. But, yeah, it's a nice little cheaper, certainly, app to use.
Yeah, sure. Definitely. It's, and like I said, it does everything I need it to do. And the interface is super simple. You can't do a lot of, you know, the things like you would do in Logic with, you know, just setting up shows beforehand with all your intros and pops and stuff. So for Grumpy Old Geeks, we actually use Apple's Soundtrack Pro, the old software for that, because that's what my co-host is comfortable with.
Oh,
so
nice.
We use that for Grumpy Old Geeks, and he does the post on that and puts in all our drops, because we've got a bunch of professionally recorded segments and stuff like that that we split in between the segments of the show. But for Does It Have Legs and my new daily show, Vapid, I just do it straight with Sound Studio.
Right, and that's... Yeah, just debating, switching gears, I guess, to Grumpy Old Geeks. That's not, like you said, now you're recording it, I'm presuming, over Skype, or what do you use to chat with?
Yeah. So we had a bunch of mic problems in the beginning. We've been having audio trouble since the get-go, because yeah, that's how you start, you know, and you figure it out along the way, you know?
Yeah.
So we finally got tired of it, and Brian and I both got the exact same Rode set up, so we have parity there. And now we're doing the fun Soundflower to Sound Studio recording. And then he takes the recording from Sound Studio and goes into Soundtrack Pro. Because we found that with Call Recorder, which most people use, the quality isn't there. And trying to get the levels right in Call Recorder is a nightmare, because the incoming call is always so much louder. So we've kind of moved to that input through Soundflower, you know, with all the different switches and settings, and then take that into Sound Studio. So we're still on separate tracks, but we have much more granular control over it, and the audio is richer.
Nice.
And of course, this last episode that you heard, 84, was the one where everything broke right before we started to record.
Well, that's what I was going to say. I had a little note here to mention that despite, you know, like you said, 84 episodes in, and there's still computers are still computers, and as much as we figure everything out, all of a sudden everything just breaks for no reason.
Of course, yes. And this is our job. We deal with computers every day, and it still blows up in your face sometimes.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And that's, was there anything that you could figure out why it might have happened, as far as, like, you know, a Yosemite upgrade or some patch or something that you did or whatever, or is it just kind of nothing?
The only thing that we can think of is a Skype update broke something, because we were both on separate systems. I had nothing that updated. He had nothing that updated. And the same problem happened on both of our systems, where Soundflower just wouldn't split the tracks. So we have no idea what happened. You know, we went through the same exact setup on both of them that worked the previous couple shows, and then poof, gone.
Right.
Out of luck.
And that's always, like I've said before many times on this show, I could probably make a drinking game around it, but my frustration or struggle with Soundflower is often that anytime it's not like a physical thing I can actually hammer or hit, and it's somewhere software inside the computer, it makes my head hurt. But I know it's actually, and also using the audio MIDI setup on app on the Mac is an interesting way of getting your levels. I hadn't thought about using that to just was quickly looking at that when you were talking about that, about, you know, adjusting levels and stuff in there for people.
Yeah. The nice thing about the audio MIDI setup is, instead of using the sound control panel where you just have the slider for each mic, you can actually use numerical values in the audio MIDI setup. So you can actually dial in numbers. So if you're going to be doing different shows with different people, you can just make a note of those numbers, go back and dial them in for the next show. So you have, you know, the same settings every time, instead of trying to drag the little slider, you know, and see, is it, yeah, 74%, 71%. This gives you like actual just numbers that you can type in, which is really handy.
Yeah, totally. And especially like I can imagine in your situation where you've got, say, three mics all on one computer in the USB or whatever in the room with you, you can just have it dialed in, set up and ready to go before your guests are even there, and keep that consistent, assuming the guests are consistent, I guess, in what they talk about or how they talk. But
one of the things I found too is we used to set up the show before the movie. I'd get everything all done, set up, have everything ready to go in GarageBand, and then as soon as I'd hit record, everything would be off, because by the time the movie was over, everything would have drifted. You know, you have all the drift correction. So we finally learned, quit GarageBand first, then start the show. Like, bring it back up and then start the show. Because GarageBand, even if just the mics are plugged in and they're not recording, the drift will still happen and everybody will be off.
Wait, so, because you would record the, do you record it while you're watching the movie as well? Is that what you're saying? Or
No, I would set up the mics and just have everything ready to go with my inputs. Oh. Nothing's recording in GarageBand, but all the mics are plugged in, ready to go. And as soon as I'd hit record, everything would already be, it would be completely off. Weird. So even though you just have the track open in GarageBand, things are still getting kind of screwed up while it's just sitting there.
That's even with just people in the room, nothing to do with multiple computers, right? You're talking?
Yeah, it was just the fact that GarageBand was open with the mics plugged into it before you hit record. If it was open for a while, it would just break.
So. See, this is where some audio engineer is just like saying, like, I told you so. That's why we should have stuck with tape or some sort of, because I always heard of, you know, trying to do a double ender with multiple people on Skype and each person records their end and you combine the two and then you get a drift because of different computers in play. But just the fact that GarageBand itself has a bit of delay, I guess it makes sense. It's pulling in from multiple USB ports and things happen, I guess. But yeah.
Frustrating. Yeah, because on the Macs, there's one port that's always got more power than the other ports, and it just gets all wacky-do. So always quit GarageBand and start it up again before you start.
Wow. Okay. Well, there's frustrating. I always thought of the dream of having a bunch of doing it in person, because it's, you know, you can see, and there's, you know, easier to have the visual interactions with each other of just normal conversation without that Skype delay. But I guess there's always going to be something with podcasting that keeps it interesting anyways, keeps you on your toes.
Yeah, people are generally the point of failure, but sometimes you have computer issues.
Yeah, exactly.
And speaking of Soundflower, it's a mystery. I have no idea how it works, but sometimes it does. Like, for right now, I'm using Soundflower, running it through Audio Hijack Pro and running a noise gate and a couple effects on it just to kind of get rid of the background noise, because I've got a busy street outside. And using the software Noise Gate really helps when I'm just doing a one-to-one Skype call. And I found that's pretty stable. It works pretty well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's an interesting way to mess a bit more with your audio going out before, when you're even a guest on another show or whatever like this. And so it runs through Audio Hijack Pro and then spits that out. That's what Skype actually sends out, is what Audio Hijack Pro is. Because there's if I remember correctly, I used it a few years ago, effects and stuff inside Audio Hijack.
Yeah. I've got a couple effects in Audio Hijack. It basically hijacks the Rode, and then in Skype, I use a Soundflower's input.
Right. Yeah. See, that's where my brain broke down. Maybe I should try it again someday just for fun, but no, actually, that doesn't sound like fun.
No. The fact that you're using like the same input and output makes no sense. It's like, okay, I'm using Soundflower as an output in one program, using it as an input in another program. It's like, what kind of magic and witchcraft is this that exactly. actually works?
That's right. I think I remember an old audio, it was probably like a MIDI program or something that I used way back in the day that actually had like a visual, you know, like you had to actually drag, you could also do it like in just a menu, but you could actually drag like cable from input to cable to output or whatever on a pretend virtual mixer. And that actually made more sense for the way my brain works. You know, to have that sort of visual representation.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. But,
yeah. GUI for GUI's sake, I guess, for dummies like me. I want to come back to just a bit more of your gear and stuff. And before I do, I just want to thank our sponsor for this episode, which is Campaign Monitor. We've talked a lot about Campaign Monitor here at Good Stuff on a lot of our shows because they've been with us since day one here at Good Stuff. And we use them to send out our email newsletter, which you can sign up for at goodstuff.fm/newsletter. You can check out their awesome template builder at canvas.cm. See how easy it is to get up and going quickly and beautifully with your own email newsletter template. I actually designed one. I've said before I designed a new one each time for our Good Stuff newsletter using Canvas. And one time I did it in what was I felt like was the quickest way possible because I was out of time and running. I had to go get the kids or something and wanted to quickly get the newsletter out. So I was doing it very quickly. And that template actually is the one Campaign Monitor contacted me and said, can we feature that newsletter template you did because we like it so much. It models what we do, how easy it is to make a design in Canvas. And so if I can do it that quickly, and I'm sure you would spend a little more time than I did designing a template for your business or your company or website or whatever, then that's a testament to how easy and well done Canvas is by Campaign Monitor. So check them out today, campaignmonitor.com, and get sending a newsletter to your clients or staff or friends or family, however you want to do it. Thanks to Campaign Monitor for supporting Good Stuff and Show Me Your Mic. And so it's back to your shows. You mentioned you have your new daily show, Vapid.
Yes. Yeah, that just came out of not wanting to blog anymore. I've been a blogger since way, way back, and I just wanted to kind of have a show where I could just kind of have, you know, daily mind spew like everybody else does now, and to keep my chops up, because I found that only doing a show once a week, by the time that next Friday rolls around, I'm rusty. So I just wanted to have like an excuse to get in front of the mic every day, write something, and just kind of engage. And, you know, my tens of listeners are, you know, they enjoy it. But for me, it's just an exercise in podcasting to keep, you know, the skills sharp.
Yeah, that's what I've noticed, too, with the dailiest show that I do here on Good Stuff. And it's kind of fun. It's an interesting challenge to talk solo without having a guest or a co-host to rely on to fill dead air or whatever. You mentioned writing. Do you actually sort of do a bit of a script-ish for yourself, or what's your process for recording that show?
Well, generally what happens is at about 4:55, I noticed that my roommate's going to be coming home soon. So I scribble out a few notes in BB Edit and then just start recording and then edit along the way and just kind of figure it out as I go. That's kind of how it's gone. Every now and again, I'll throw some notes in Evernote just so I have, you know, if I like wake up in the middle of the night, I'm like, oh, that'd be a good show idea. So I'll put that in there. Like the one I did yesterday was on the first time I almost got carjacked in LA because I couldn't think of anything else to talk about. So I'm like, let's dig in the bag and find a story.
Nice. And so is your goal sort of actually to do it daily, or do you kind of like follow my lazy daily-ish to put the little clarifier on there to give yourself the lazy freedom to not do a episode every day, or what's your sort of goal for it?
I was very annoyed that you took the ish because I was going to use that too.
I haven't trademarked it yet, but
okay. Well, you know, you can't steal that much, but I thoroughly enjoy your daily ish show. So
thanks.
I do it Monday through Friday. That's pretty much it. I started to do it Tuesday through Saturday or Sunday through, but you know, Monday through Friday works the best. And I blame Jordan Cooper because he's the one that kind of kicked my butt into doing it every day. So that's how that kind of came around. Nice. So yeah, Monday through Friday is the schedule on that. So you got to have a few days off.
Right. Yeah, exactly. And do you put a time limit? That's the one I haven't got around to listening to yet, but do you put time limits on it, or is it kind of just free range, whatever happens to go that day? And
5 minutes-ish. That's about it. I try and keep it around 5 minutes just because any longer than that, it gets boring. And any shorter than that, it's like, why did I even bother downloading it? But 5 minutes seems to be a good one for these daily ones. Most of the people that do them, you do one. Lex Friedman does one. I can't remember if anybody else I listen to has one. But I like that just short format. You check in with people that you like, you know, and it gives you just kind of a view into their world. I think it's fun.
Yeah. And that's, I think... for anybody looking into getting into podcasting, it's maybe it seems either for some people, it's probably that what they would do naturally is just, you know, riff on a microphone and record it and see what it sounds like. For me, it was just like the opposite of what I wanted to do. Just because it felt terrifying that I would put some random thought out there without having somebody else to blame for the poorness of it or something. But it is a great, like I've said I think before and on this show already, but like a great exercise in just if you aspire to do this kind of podcasting stuff, talking into a microphone, what better way to sort of push yourself and practice that, exercise that muscle, as it were. So
yeah, I couldn't agree more. It's just a fun exercise, and you get better at it because you know, you're listening to yourself every day. You find your isms that you do. My big one is I keep saying "so." So I have a post-it note on my lap, on my screen that says "stop saying so," and it's fun. And the thing that kept me from doing it for so long was overthinking it and trying to pre-produce, like, you know, an NPR level show every day. It's like no. If you just say it's a blog, you know, an audio blog, That's all you really need. You know, these are just my personal thoughts every day. I ran into some idiot at the grocery store, whatever, you know.
Yeah.
People like to listen to that stuff.
Yeah. And especially, I think that idea, like, you're in as much as we, like we, I said it earlier, we're aspiring to do better quality stuff, podcasts these days. We're individuals doing this out of our basement or whatever the case may be. We don't have a script writer or a producer and an editor on our show. Especially if you're aspiring to do it daily, you're going to have some garbage episodes, but just get past those and then you'll get some awesome ones too in there. So that's,
yeah, there's always tomorrow.
Yeah, you know? Exactly. There's a interesting sort of situation or whatever, events happening up here in Canada where a popular radio host was, whatever, garbage stuff happened and he's been canned but a lot of people sort of came out wondering, like, well, how is this person who's so nice and who did the show? He talked so eloquently about, even like it was to do with abuse and harassment of women and stuff like that. And so how could this person who read these things and spoke so eloquently on air be the same guy doing this other stuff? And the producers and editors of the show said, well, he's not actually saying his own words. Like, those are all written. He performs them. And for me, it was kind of like a revelation of like, well, aside from all the garbage stuff, but like that idea that a lot of these folks that, and you kind of know it, but you don't really think it through when you're listening to this person who you think is such an amazing speaker or orator or whatever of these words, that they have the whole, as if that person has the whole package together, right? But they actually have a team writing for them sometimes. And so, yeah, to not be so hard on yourself that you're not attaining that level of quality or whatever when you're hit and record in your own basement or wherever you happen to be. So that's my little soapbox of motivational speech, hopefully to somebody out there. All right. So what I like to talk about to folks about too is some of the shows and things that you guys listen to. I don't know if you have your podcast player of app of choice handy, and also a bit of a listener suggestion. My buddy Dave Rupert suggested that I should be asking folks for a quick photo of their recording gear. So you don't have to send it to me right this second, but I just wanted to mention on air for future guests as well, so I remember to ask you to take a photo, either, you know, sort of like the desk shot of the mic and the whatever gear you might have, recording window open or something like that, or yourself in front of it or whatever, just to make it a little more personal and something for people to actually see. This is obviously just an audio medium, but to actually connect what's actually going on when we're recording stuff together. So podcasts that you listen to and you enjoy, and you've mentioned a few that we've talked about, some of the, like the Lex Friedman's show and things like that, but what are some podcasts you like to listen to?
So my go-tos that I always get excited when there's a new episode are You Are Not So Smart, which is one of the best shows out there. Talks about a lot of logical fallacies and just really cool psychological stuff. And the guy wrote two books that are really good. One's called You Are Not So Smart and You Are Now Less Dumb. And a lot of it comes from those books, and they're fantastic. The podcasts are fantastic. Grit, formerly known as Quit. I think that was actually the first show that I was a caller on.
Oh, nice.
So I'm a fan of that one. Obviously, Tech Douchebags from our buddy Jordan. I was also a guest on that one. That was my first guest appearance. You're my second, so got to throw out some love. both of Dan Carlin's shows, Hardcore History and Common Sense, are great. Still Untitled, The Adam Savage Project. I've got like 50 in my phone, but I don't have it handy. I listen to a lot of podcasts. And I got to throw a shout out for the guy I work for, The Art of Charm podcast. It's about business and social dynamics. It's my day job. I work for those guys. And they're killing it on the podcast over there.
Nice. Yeah, it's. Do you listen? Do you have a commute that you listen to or podcast to, or do you just like you just have them going all the time, kind of in the background?
I used to have a commute. I used to live in LA, and I worked about an hour and a half away from my office, so I had 3 hours a day just to listen to podcasts back then. Now I work from home, so I just have them on all the time. I just wear my headphones around the house, and I've always got something playing. It's either a podcast or an audiobook. I'm a huge just audio fan.
So, nice.
Yeah, working from home makes it tough, but I kind of got it down now.
Yeah, I often find myself just because a similar situation, either I go to an office or at home, but the commute isn't there at all anymore. And so I have to sometimes have to remind myself to just hit play, and then I'll, you know, I love listening to them, but I just get working or whatever, as yeah, or distracted on Twitter or something and forget to just hit play on this thinking podcast. What apps are you using these days to listen
to? So I was trying to pull away from technology for a while. We did a couple episodes on this on Grumpy Old Geeks, and I actually went out and bought an iPod, like one of the last iPods that you can buy. So I had to switch over to using the podcast app in iTunes to kind of sync it, because there's no connection. You actually have to plug it in and sync it.
Like actual. Sorry, I was thinking iPod Touch, but you're saying actual, iPod.
And a straight up iPod with no network connectivity. So when I went on a walk, I could leave my iPhone at home, and I wouldn't always be checking it to see if like somebody's texting me from work. It's like it kind of gave me a little bit of calm and peace.
Yeah.
So I unfortunately with that I had to use the iPod, or I mean the podcast app, and God, is that thing terrible! It's so terrible.
It's gotten a little better, right? You're talking, in iTunes or whatever.
It's bad.
Yeah.
It's bad. My preference is Downcast. I love Downcast. It lets me do a lot of stuff I can't do with like the iPhone. If I need to just drag a show in to my phone, I can't do it with the podcast app or the music things, because I use iTunes Match, and they won't let you just drag a file into your phone with that. So Downcast at least lets me import it to like test out a show, because I listen to all of our shows before they go out. I just listen to them at 3x to make sure that there are no gaffes in them. And that's really helpful for that. I've tried all the other ones, but I just keep going back to Downcast. It's my favorite.
Yeah. Oh, nice. I need to throw a quick thank you, shout out or whatever to the folks over at Pocket Cast, because they Pocket Cast 5 came out. Also, another good app. I like Downcast. Cornucopia. I don't know if that's right. Probably not the right word for this situation, but so many amazing podcast apps to listen to and choose from these days that were not. I remember when it was just like iTunes, or you had to just play it off the web to listen to podcasts. And anyways, Pocket Cast 5 came out recently, and in their blog post, anyways, they featured Good Stuff's transmission show, as well as actually a little tease it was the last one in the row of Show Me Your Mic. Actually, the artwork is on their player, and so just thanks to them, and definitely want to just give thanks, I guess, for featuring the show in that way. There's no like hard link or anything like that in the description, but just a little like tease of you can just see me or Mike is in the post. But it's enough to make at least a podcaster feel a little bit loved for having decent artwork, anyways, I guess. Decent enough to be featured in their posts. So thanks to those guys over there.
I was going to say, as podcasters, we take the love wherever we can get it.
Yeah, exactly. It is one of those conundrums, and this is an ongoing conversation, of just the lack of sort of shareability of podcasts, because you can't, it's really hard to just, in the same way we used to with blog posts, and still do with blog posts, where you just copy and block quote it and link to articles very easily, and people are very keen on doing that. It's a little harder to get some of that sort of web love, I guess. But I'm assuming, I would guess Downcast has something like this. I know Overcast has this. Pocket Cast has the ability to, like, when I'm listening on the phone, I can just create a link to that exact moment in the show and tweet that out or email it or whatever. And that goes a long way. I kind of forget that it's an option to do when I'm listening to a show, but I try, like, every so often I'll think, oh, I should remember to share this moment at 2:45 or whatever, and obviously I won't if I don't do it right then. But it's a neat little feature of some of these apps that you can do that. So
I've never known that. That's really cool. I'm gonna have to try that.
Yeah, it's I hate to give credit to anybody, like for me it was Overcast I saw first doing. I'm sure somebody else has done it before. It doesn't seem like it's a completely unique idea, but it is something, you know, I'm sure it's hard to implement I'm not being a programmer at all. It just seems like magic. But yeah, it's neat because they create like just a quick short link, short URL to share. And obviously they have to have some sort of web player, which Pocket Cast does and Overcast does. They have to have a web component. Then people can play from there. And it's still, for a podcaster, it's not like those players are changing, like they're not hosting your file for you or taking any, you know, listens away from you or any of that kind of stuff, which other services might sometimes do, I guess, or it might be the fear that would happen. Like these modern app developers tend to be very sensitive to the idea because often they're podcasters themselves, like with Overcast, Mark Arment, developing that as a podcaster as well, sensitive to the idea that we still need to know how many people are listening, even if it's for one section. And so they're still just linking to your original file. They sometimes set up a web page that grabs some of your show notes, but the file itself, the media file, is linking to your original location. So that's the main thing, I think. So,
yeah, don't want to take away from our numbers.
Exactly.
God forbid. God forbid. I tell you what's new that I've seen, because I host with Libsyn. And nowadays, if you take just the media URL and post it directly into Twitter or Facebook, they'll come up with a media card for that now. So you can actually have a player for your entire show in a tweet or on a post on Facebook.
Oh, interesting. So that's is that any Libsyn show, or do you have to apply for a certain thing?
No, it's just the media file. So
neat.
Yeah, I'm hosting with, I've got a full spectrum of their hosting. I've got the pro service that we use for the Art of Charm. It works great there. That one lets you put in a custom icon, so the player is like branded to you, but that's like the big kahuna paid service. But I use the lower packages for my other shows, and it still gives you the player. It's just branded Libsyn. The Facebook one doesn't work on mobile because it's got to be a Flash player, unfortunately. But I've noticed since we started doing this, our numbers are up 25%.
So. That's amazing, actually, because that's, yeah, I know for a long time Libsyn had the, like, you know, you pay, I forget which service plan it was, and you can get a free app developed sort of or whatever, right?
That's it's like their 40 plan. You have to have like the 400 plan, I think, is the one that starts with the app. And I've used their app. I've had them whip one up for Grumpy Old Geeks, and it was so bad that we just said screw it. And I had a friend do a custom app for us. So we've got a Grumpy Old Geeks app.
Oh, nice.
That's just a player. It's just a straight up player. And that's the downside of Libsyn. I love them. They do a great job with getting my media files to everybody. But man, it is the ugliest site I've ever had to use.
Yeah. I'm going to generalize here with, I would guess, most Mac users, and I'm sure a lot of Windows users too who use it are just kind of like, why does it? And they did a, I remember them doing a big redesign a few years ago, and I was like, oh, here's the new one. And it's like, no, it's still bad. It still looks like you're designing for Windows 95 style interfaces. But yeah, they're amazing. That's great to hear that, because I've seen Twitter talk about the audio cards, and it was relation to like SoundCloud, yeah. And them having, you know, the Twitter card kind of thing where you could just embed it and play it right there, which, going back to the Daily Journal kind of shows, the 5 minutes, 10 minutes or less kind of shows that we do, that's, to me, is an awesome opportunity there. I used to just like hot link right to the MP3 file in a tweet, and that would actually help too with just getting a little bit more listen, because, you know, it's a longer form tweet or whatever, if you want to call it that, that somebody would be willing to sit and listen to on their app or sitting at their computer or whatever quickly, where they wouldn't necessarily go to a podcast player page and click play. And so, that's interesting to hear. I'll have to play around with the Libsyn stuff. So it must just know that like they have something set up where any Libsyn URL gets auto generated into that kind of card thing or something. So,
yeah, I haven't tried it with a straight MP3, but these links are just MP3 links. So I'd give it a shot with just a straight up one and see how it treats you.
Yeah, and it's something I know at Good Stuff here, we've been going back because we use S3, Amazon S3 for hosting the files, but it is, they're not really, it's not that they're not podcast focused, obviously. That's not what, they're just trying to do cheap, quick, easy hosting, not easy necessarily if you're not technically inclined, but we have people who are involved more so than myself, but that's not their primary goal. And so it's not like Amazon's going to be like petitioning Twitter to set up a S3 Twitter card for the podcasters that use their service, because that's not where they're making their money, I don't think. But
we used S3 for the Art of Charm for the first like 200 episodes. And at some point it actually became cheaper to move everything to Libsyn, because just the S3 costs, once you hit a certain tipping point, it gets to be cheaper just to go with a dedicated podcast host. And once we made that switch, life has been so much easier. Yeah. Instead of having to deal with us three.
Yeah. And I don't know if there's any, if any folks from Libsyn happen to listen to this, we'd love to hear, because the reason, one of the reasons we use, go a little meta behind the scenes, I guess, with Good Stuff is we're using S3 primarily because it allows us to manipulate the metadata on the MP3 file from our CMS. We have a custom written CMS that allows us to edit that because there's a, obviously an API or whatever to connect into what S3 is doing. Whereas Libsyn doesn't allow us to, or we couldn't figure out a way to get Libsyn to do that. We big fans of Libsyn as a service, but we couldn't figure out a way. But yeah, definitely we felt that hurt last month when iTunes featured Good Stuff on the homepage, and it's like, yay. And then the next month you're like, oh crap, we got this big bill and it doesn't, the sponsor stuff doesn't follow for a few months until after you get the big downloads. And so, yeah. Anyways, that's our stuff to figure out. But I would love to hear from somebody at Libsyn if they've got a solution for us, because we need to, we like with having multiple people and different abilities of podcasting abilities and editing metadata, we don't want our host to have to, you know, go into iTunes and edit metadata and update and upload. We want them to just be able to upload a file and be done with it and not have to worry about things. But then, yeah, we do sacrifice in other areas. So Chris at goodstuff.fm is where you can hit me up on email if you've got a solution for us. We'd love to hear about it. All right. Well, that's enough navel gazing on Good Stuff. Anyways, what, where can folks find you, follow you, stalk you on the internet these days?
Well, you can check out Does It Have Legs and Grumpy Old Geeks at grumpyoldgeeks.com. Me personally, you can find me at jpd.me.
Nice. And you do the Twitters and stuff for all the...
Yeah, links to all the stuff is on those sites.
Okay. Sounds good. So yeah, thanks to Jason for joining me on Show Me Your Mic. You can follow Show Me Your Mic on Twitter, SMYM_FM. GoodStuff_FM is the Good Stuff Twitter account. I'm iChris, so there's three different Twitter accounts to just quickly go follow right away. My thanks to Campaign Monitor for sponsoring Good Stuff and Show Me Your Mic, and thank you for listening. Have a great day. Bye. Hey, before the big music hits, I just wanted to let you know that Jason and I continued our conversation a little bit further on the auxiliary show on Good Stuff, which is kind of like where we put stuff that sometimes happens after a show is done. Talking sponsorship and Patreon and some of those ideas. So you can check that out, goodstuff.fm/AUX, and the link will be in the show notes on this show as well. See ya.